You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy New Year, everybody. Welcome into Locked On Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. If you're a Rockets fan waking up in 2017, well, it's a pretty happy start to the year at least, because the Rockets are now 26-9. They took care of business in both ends of the back-to-back on the 30th and 31st. Got a huge 140-116 win over the Clippers on the front end. Then on New Year's Eve, took care of business against the Knicks, 129-122. Rockets finished up December at 15-2 overall. Now at 26-9 in the year, they're winning at above a 74% clip. That puts them on pace to win 61 games for this season. Just a phenomenal start to the season for the Rockets. And really, it's not just a start anymore. Now that we are 35 games in, we're just 6 games away from the halfway point. So this is far from a hot stretch. Your Houston Rockets are clearly in the upper echelon in the Western Conference and in the entire NBA. Now, as far as how the Rockets got it done in that second game, the most recent against the Knicks, it starts obviously with an otherworldly performance from James Harden. 53 points, 17 assists, 16 rebounds, easily one of the better individual games in the history of the NBA. The first time in the history of the league that someone's had 50-plus points and 15-plus assists in the same game, and we're not even factoring in the 16 rebounds. Harden actually accounted for 95 points directly, either through his scoring, that's 53 points, or his assist, 8 of which went for 3. So this was an incredible night from James, and it came at a perfect time because second night of a back-to-back, Pat Beverly out because of right wrist pain. That's not considered serious, but certainly it's a big absence in the short term. And the Knicks, they had a lot of energy, and they took a double-digit lead early in this game. And there were a lot of things that went wrong for the Rockets, but quite frankly, James Harden was not going to let them lose, even if it required a 53-17-16 game. Because Eric Gordon, just 5 of 19 from the field. Trevor Ariza, 5 of 15. A lot of the usual guys, they missed their threes. They were missing their shots. This was a game on the second night of a back-to-back that it could have jumped up and bitten the Rockets. Harden just didn't let it. Not just the 53 points, he did it on 14 of 26 from the field, 9 of 16 from 3, 16 of 18 from the free throw line. Just an incredible performance that his will took over the game in the final three quarters and would not let the Rockets lose. They're a better team than the Knicks, but they're not, you know, night and day. The Knicks are a competitive team. They are basically right at 500, so it's not one of those teams where, you know, you're playing the Sixers and trying to, you know, if it's even close, you're concerned. No, the Knicks are a decent team, second half of back-to-back, and you give credit to Harden for having the professionalism not to let the Rockets lose that game. Now, as far as the MVP race, I've said my piece before, but let's take a step back. The obvious top two candidates are James Harden and Russell Westbrook. We know that. Right now, as we enter 2017, the Rockets are closer to the Golden State Warriors for the one seed and best record in the NBA than Russell Westbrook's Thunder are to the Rockets. That's how big the gap is. The Rockets are 26-9. The Warriors are 29-5, class of the league. Rockets are just 3.5 games behind them. The Thunder are 21-13. That puts them 4.5 games behind the Rockets. So yes, it's nice that Russell Westbrook is averaging a triple-double. The Thunder are not the most talented team in the league. They're also not bad, but they're a so-so team, and Westbrook's leading them to, right now, 21-13. They're on pace to win 50 games. Okay, that's nice. They'll be a mid-tier playoff team. The Rockets aren't just going to win 50 games. They are on pace to win 61, to be 40 games over 500. The Rockets are on pace not just to be a good team, but an elite team. And that, to me, is the difference. Yeah, it's nice that Russell Westbrook averages a triple-double. But throughout the history of the MVP award, it is strongly correlated with team success and being the best player on a team that is at contending level. If it were the other way around, Harden would have won the media's MVP 2 years ago when he just won the Players Award against Stephen Curry. Because clearly, Harden did more than Curry that year to lift his team. He was more individually responsible, if you want to use that as your logic. But Curry got the award because, as it typically is, voters blended it between the individual success, how much is so-and-so lifting a team, with being the best player on a true title contender. And right now, forget the numbers. Forget that the Rockets are 3 and the Thunder are 5. You look at the win-loss totals. You look at the actual margin. Rockets on pace to be a 61-win team. Thunder on pace to be a 50-win team. So the difference is that, yes, both are posting big numbers, but the difference is that Harden is doing it on a team that is playing at a contending level. And unless that falls off, and I'm certainly not seeing any signs of that at the moment, it's hard for me to see an avenue for Westbrook to win the award, because Harden is doing everything that he's doing, and right now his numbers are just as insane as Russell's when you factor in the 53, 17, and 16 that we saw on Saturday night against the Knicks. Because right now, Harden's numbers, boy, 28.5 points, 12 assists, 8.1 rebounds. He's a couple rebounds shy of a triple-double, but scoring, he's right there. Assist, he's actually ahead of Russell. And then you factor that in with the team's high level of success. I don't see what argument you can really make for Westbrook to win the award, especially when you consider that the consensus expectation for the Rockets before the year was for them to be, well, a lower tier playoff team and win between 40 and 45 games. That's what most people predicted. We all saw it. So for people to turn around and then say, well, Harden just has too much talent around him and Westbrook's doing more with less, that's just absolutely silly, because the vast majority, I would say 90% of the NBA, thought nothing of this Rockets team before the year. Just thought they were a pretty decent club who would compete for the 6, 7, 8 spot in the Western Conference, maybe 500 or a little above. So we can't go from that and then in 2 months later say that, well, these Rockets just have too much talent. They're just too good. No, it doesn't work that way. The truth is kind of in between. Yes, I always said on the show the Rockets' talent heading into the year was better than what a lot in the national media gave them credit for. However, it's also not that good either. The reason why guys like Montrezl Harrell are able to step in and have a career-high 29 points, as he did against the Clippers on Friday. The reason Ryan Anderson can score 25 points, 8 of 12 from the field, 4 of 8 from 3 on all the open looks he got Saturday against the Knicks, is because of James Harden's leadership and how good of a passer and team player he is. This is a culture that starts from the top down with James Harden and Mike D'Antoni, and Harden's willingness to spread the ball is getting his teammates so many open shots. Yes, it's nice that the Rockets went out and got a couple of good shooters like Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson, but it means nothing if you don't have a player, a leader in James Harden that's willing to spread the ball to those guys. Everything that is happening from the Rockets starts with James Harden and his willingness to embrace the point guard role in Mike D'Antoni's system and dish the ball to these guys. That's a big part of why they suddenly seem so good. Because last year, Montrezl Harrell was struggling to get run. Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon, they were role players on a bad New Orleans team, even when they were healthy. So, no, it's not just as easy as you put these guys together and, well, the talent's overwhelming. No, there's something special in the chemistry in Houston, and that starts with James Harden and how he is running Mike D'Antoni's system. So, no, I do not accept the argument that Westbrook is playing with a lesser deck in Oklahoma City relative to what James Harden has in Houston. It is the culture that James has established that is allowing them to play at this elite level. So when you combine that with his already otherworldly numbers just in terms of points, rebounds, assists, you know, just traditional averages, I think it's pretty clear that at least between Harden and Westbrook, James is your choice for MVP as we head into 2017. Now, could that change? Certainly. First off, Harden and Westbrook play each other on Thursday. These head-to-head matchups, they always count for something. Maybe that changes. Biggest thing that could change, if the Rockets fall off from their 61-win pace, if the Thunder somehow take another step forward, then yeah, we can reevaluate that at the end of the year and we'll see where things stand. But right now, as long as the Rockets are on pace to be a 60-plus win team and the Thunder are over 10 games lagging behind them, I don't see the case. James Harden is your MVP of the NBA as we start 2017. Now, with that positive out of the way, I don't want to gloss over the negatives. Because even with James Harden having one of the best individual games in the history of the NBA on Saturday night, the Knicks had a double-digit lead early. And in the fourth quarter, they got to within 3 points a couple of times. Now, certainly, second night of a back-to-back, no Pat Beverly. So the Rockets were not at full strength. I think the legs were probably a little bit tired, and that played into it. But the other thing, and we've seen it at various times the last two nights, with Montrezl Harrell in the middle and Clint Capela out, the Rockets are struggling on the glass. They're actually out-rebounded by the Knicks, just by a couple, but that's, huge because the Rockets have generally out-rebounded most opponents all year long. Big thing is that Harrell, in his 33 minutes, had just 4 rebounds. He did have 4 assists, which is nice. You're seeing Harrell not just score offensively, but he's turning into a better passer in D'Antoni's system, too. But in terms of rebounding, Joaquin Noah just crushed him on the glass. 16 rebounds. So many big ones on the offensive glass to keep possessions alive for the Knicks. And we saw this in stretches Friday night as well. I know the Rockets ended up pulling away and beating the Clippers by 24 points, but they had a 25-point lead in that game at one point. They got whittled down to 6 by early in the fourth quarter, and that was because DeAndre Jordan, well, he had 20-10 just 25 minutes into the game. He was abusing the Rockets in the pick and roll. He was getting every rebound around the basket, and at the end of the day in that game, Harrell's offense did offset his defense. When you score 29 points, it's hard to argue otherwise, especially if your team ends up winning by 24. But you can see from time to time the matchup struggles, and Saturday night was another one of them. Harrell was just plus 7. That was nowhere near the plus 13 of Harden and Anderson, which led the Rockets, certainly. And Joaquin Noah, again, controlled them on the glass. And it's one of those things, it's not as simple as pulling Harrell, because there are going to be situations where offensively, he's so good, like he was on Friday, that it completely offsets any defensive limitations. And you can also make the argument that, well, maybe a reason why Harrell is able to give you that kind of output on the offensive end is because he stays in the game and is able to generate momentum, is able to build confidence. So he continues to play, gets into a rhythm, gets into a flow. You can't just yank guys in and out, play them for a couple of minutes, and expect them to be at peak production. So certainly, even if he gives you a little bit of a negative on the defensive end, if that's helping him gain productivity, confidence for the offensive end, then maybe some matchups it's beneficial. But when you talk about the playoffs, when you talk about looking forward to do or die games, there are certain matchups with Montrezl Harrell where you can foresee a scenario where he just doesn't have it on a given night. And when Clint Capella gets back, that will help you some, yes. But Clint Capella is, just like Harrell, better on the offensive end than he is on the defensive. Now, Capella is still better than Harrell defensively. That is an important distinction. But Clint is not a traditional defensive center by any means. And Nene, we all know what Nene's role is. He's basically a 12 to 15 minute per game veteran. He's good in certain situations, but I don't think you want to rely on him for any sort of regular role at 34 years old. So what you have, yes, Clint Capella gives you more defensively, and it'd be nice when you have all three centers back, but there is a weakness in terms of defense and rebounding in the middle. That was why the Rockets were willing to go after Donatus Mani-Yunas. That's why they were linked to big men such as Kostas Koufos on the trade market. And these last two games, while it's great the Rockets won them, I do think there were moments in each of them where it reminded you why that's a need for the Rockets. And it's not an enormous need. As I was saying, Harrell's good enough offensively. Even Saturday night, yeah, he struggled on the glass. He had 4 assists, as I said, getting much better as a passer. 13 points on 6 of 7 shooting. So he's a really good offensive player. And in a lot of nights, maybe most nights, his offense is going to offset anything negative he does on the defensive end of the floor. But if you want the option, if you want more flexibility as we get to the playoffs and having something to turn if one of these bigs is just eating your lunch, you can see the need for the Rockets to make a move. Now, they don't have to do anything drastic to do it. I think Harrell and Capella and Clint should be back in a couple of weeks, we hope. I think there's enough there to where you don't sell the farm for another big, especially if, at that point, you'd have 4 centers, and there are going to be some nights where some of those guys would just rack up, did not play coach's decision. So you're not going to sell the farm to do it. But if you can make a moderate move, if you can make, you know, a Corey Brewer plus a second round pick or some combination of KJ McDaniels, Tyler Ennis, the young prospect package, if you can get another big in here without sacrificing a key part of your rotation, I think the Rockets would do it. I think that's what they're exploring right now. Now, of course, question is, why would another team do it if they're not getting a big piece of a Rockets rotation and they're not getting a first-round draft pick? Well, I think that's why a deal hasn't been done, because the Rockets aren't offering enough to where a team like Sacramento is going to bite immediately. They'd rather wait a little closer to the deadline, see if other teams might raise their offer, and then accept whatever the package is from the Rockets. So I think that's why you haven't seen movement just yet. But is it a need for the team? Sure it is, and I think the Rockets, they're not going to go overboard. They're not going to take away any important pieces from a team rotation that's currently on pace to win 60-plus games, but I do think they're going to be open to the idea. I think you guys are going to hear a few more rumors in the coming weeks. We're just going to have to stay patient because for the Rockets, again, it's not so much about Clint's injury. It would be nice if they had another big body to mitigate these next 2 or 3 weeks until Clint Capella gets back from the fibula fracture. But long-term, it's about playoffs. It's about matchups. And the Rockets are at a point now when you're over 60 wins, you are a contender. This is a year that you cannot punt on. You cannot say, well, we're going to build for summer of July 2017. No, the Rockets have to worry about today. And when you look at some of the matchups they could go up against in the playoffs, the Clippers at full strength, if they get Blake Griffin back, and of course you have DeAndre in the middle, the Jazz with Rudy Gobert, the Grizzlies with Marc Gasol, there are some of these big matchups where I would have a little bit of fear. I'm not saying the Rockets would necessarily lose a series to any of those, but you could see the matchup problems, and so the Rockets are going to have to start to take those a little more seriously than they might have a couple of months ago when our expectation was basically make the playoffs, hope to win 50 games. The bar has clearly been raised at this point for the Rockets, and while I think we're all happy and reveling in that as we open 2017, you can also see a few cases from time to time for just why the Rockets are looking at moves to potentially upgrade the defense and rebounding presence in their front court. By the way, one final note on that next game before we wrap up. Corey Brewer, in the absence of Pat Beverly, Brewer played 29 minutes, shot 3 of 6 from the field. We all know his limitations. He doesn't shoot threes well, although he did at least make one on Saturday night. He has bonehead turnovers from time to time, but the Rockets can trust him on the defensive end of the floor. They can trust him to run Mike D'Antoni's system, to pass the ball. There is a trust factor there. So, yes, I do think that they see him as having value. Now, would they move him? Yeah, in the right deal, they would, and we heard Friday from Zach Lowe that the Rockets had been dangling him in some of these scenarios for a big, because in theory, you could just plug and play KJ McDaniels into those minutes. But I don't think the Rockets are desperate to move him by any stretch or replace him in the rotation. There's a reason why KJ McDaniels, despite being so hyped up in October, is not playing major minutes, because Corey Brewer, there is a trust factor there. He is playing very good on the defensive end. I don't think you want him to play 29 minutes most nights, but Saturday night he did that, and the Rockets won against a pretty good team. So give him credit. We all know what his limitations are, but he is still playing very hard. He's still playing, especially on the defensive end, very smart basketball, and he fits in with this group very well. So I know he's kind of a popular punching bag because he's maybe the only wing player on this roster that can't shoot, but it doesn't mean he's without value. On the defensive end, he's been very good for them lately, and we saw more evidence of that on Saturday evening. Now, spinning it forward the rest of the week, the Rockets host the Wizards on Monday the 2nd. That's their third game in 4 nights at Toyota Center. Then they wrap up this 4-game homestand on Thursday the 5th. That's the huge game against Russell Westbrook's Oklahoma City Thunder. That's on TNT. It's going to be very hyped, watched around the entire country because it's a national TV game. So you got a lot to look forward to then. Then the schedule does stiffen up a lot. You've got at Orlando, then at Toronto. Toronto is the only team other than Golden State with a better plus-minus differential than the Rockets. So on the road playing those guys, they already beat the Rockets once this year. That's one of the few games that the Rockets are going to be an underdog in the rest of this year. Because right now, the Rockets aren't just beating teams. They're beating the crap out of most teams. So really, at Toronto, Golden State on the 20th, maybe at Memphis on the 21st. That's the second night of a back-to-back. Those are the only games the Rockets might be underdogs in this entire month, because clearly it's time to readjust expectations when you're almost to the halfway point and the Rockets are on pace to win 61. It's pretty clear this isn't just a phase. The Rockets are this good. The negative to it is that while there are a lot of games in a short amount of time, we heard Mike D'Antoni say it earlier this week, there are 17 games for the Rockets in December and just 31 days, so that tells you there's going to be a decent amount of back-to-backs, and they're shorthanded right now without Clint Capella in the middle. We do hope that he's going to come back at some point in January, but we don't know exactly when that's going to be. We know Pat Beverly is also dealing with a couple of minor nicks. He had the quad issue earlier this week. Now he had right wrist pain on Saturday evening. Again, none considered, threatening for any sort of prolonged absence. But when you're the Rockets and the depth behind him is Tyler Ennis, yeah, it bears watching, because the Rockets, yeah, they're deep in the rotation now with 8 or 9, but beyond the 8 or 9 that are clearly in the rotation, it's not like there are are capable NBA players just sitting and languishing on the end of the bench? If there was an injury to anyone, it is a concern. So you do hope Pat Beverley is able to use his time off in Houston to get better. He'll Clint Capella. We saw him last week at practice. That's always a good sign. He's working out, so it doesn't seem like there's any kind of setback there. But injuries, health is going to be a big deal this month because there are a lot of games for the Rockets. Not too many extremely difficult games, but a few. And the main thing, with just such a high volume, for a lot of teams, you see schedule losses because, well, the Clippers, it's not just Blake Griffin in the knee. Chris Paul has a nagging hamstring injury. He missed that game on Friday night in Houston. Yeah, he also sat out Saturday night against Oklahoma City, another game the Clippers were routed in. So you see these types of injuries, and you combine that with the rigors of an 82-game schedule, and that's why even good teams like the Clippers, they've now lost six in a row, and they've dropped from the 3 seed, now occupied by the Rockets, all the way to the 7. This stuff happens. A big reason why it doesn't for the Rockets is that the core of the team, and that starts with James Harden, has been very durable. He doesn't have those nagging little hamstring pulls that cause him to miss games. He doesn't sit for rest. He plays every game, and even if there's a little bit of absences elsewhere, or maybe the rest of his team isn't shooting threes, if he's got to score 50, 15, and 15 to win, which the Rockets needed almost all of it Saturday night against the Knicks, well, that's what he's going to do. So the Rockets have had a leg up on many of their competitors around the NBA because of how durable they are, especially James Harden, but you're going to need to see that even more so in January with a few, you know, little nagging injuries throughout the roster. But the main thing is just 17 games in 31 days, really 17 games in 30 days because the Rockets are off today, New Year's Day. So cross your fingers, but if they can stay healthy, the schedule, a lot of games from a volume standpoint, not too many that really scare you from a personnel standpoint. So while the Rockets, I don't know if they'll be 15-2 again the way they were in December, but there's a good case for this to be a very positive month from the team standpoint yet again. So on that happy note, I will wrap up. Appreciate all of you guys for listening. I'm Ben Dubose. Follow me on Twitter at Ben Dubose. It's Locked On Rockets. Follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Rockets. You can also email the show at LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. If you've got questions for me, suggestions, or anything to do with this basketball team, just let me know. We're happy to hear from you. We want to be voice for the fans. That's what this Locked On Podcast Network is all about. We've got a host in every NBA city, every NFL city. And as I always tell you guys, if you haven't checked out Locked On Texans, please do. That's our sister podcast from over on Kirby, that's hosted by Robert Land. Texans are getting ready for a playoff game later this week, so Robert's going to have you covered throughout the week. You can find them on the same sources you find us, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Audio Boom. Just search for Locked On Rockets, search for Locked On Texans, search for Locked On whoever if you want to hear insight from each NBA and NFL city. That's what the network is there for. We want to be your resource on a day-to-day basis. So just search for Locked On Podcasts wherever you consume your media. For now, I will sign off. I hope all of you guys have a great start to your new year. Enjoy your New Year's Day. Texans have a big game at noon against the Titans, and I'll be watching that the rest of the day. We'll get back into Rockets coverage tomorrow as they get ready for the Washington Wizards on Monday night at Toyota Center. Talk to you guys then.